countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Have you cattle to sell? Find out what they're worth with our March price calculator on farmersjournal.ie.
And now on RTE Radio 1, it's time for this week's Countrywide with Damien O'Reilly.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal, bringing 295,000 readers the latest farming news and the best of rural Ireland weekly.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Coming up between now and 9 o'clock, the horror of a farm accident, one survivor's story. A new survey gauges the mood of farmers. The Kildare man living with goats in a Mongolian yurt. And the story behind unique mosaic shop fronts in the West.
Text 51551. Email countrywide at rte.ie and tweet at RTE Countrywide.
But first, this week, the Minister for the Environment, Eamon Ryan, introduced his long-awaited Climate Action Bill to the Dáil.
There's consensus politically, and I think among our people on this, that we're tired of being laggards and we want to be leaders, and I think we will now. It will take several decades to achieve the objective of going carbon neutral, but that's the target we're setting ourselves. In the next decade, and this is what the bill sets out, it will be particularly dramatic because it's a 50% reduction in emissions we're looking to do. The future of agriculture is in an agriculture which restores nature.
This will chime with Europe's targets outlined by EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen at the Global Earth Day Summit hosted by President Joe Biden this week.
Rewrite into stone the goal set out by the European Green Deal to make Europe climate neutral by 2050. And we have also agreed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by at least 55% by 2030.
This means changes in farming and how food is produced with immediate effect across Europe. Writing in this week's Farming Independent, dairy farmer Gillian O'Sullivan, who milks 100 cows along with her husband Neil on their farm near Dungarvan in County Waterford, highlighted that the industry is not supporting farmers as they adapt to more sustainable farming practices. She's been telling me why she thinks the lack of certainty and poor joined-up thinking from government through to milk processors is leaving farmers stuck in the middle, gagged and trussed, as they try to transition to meet targets.
What's happening at the moment is that as we're making plans, the goalposts for agriculture are shifting all the time. Well, for us, we're a derogation farm, so like changes that have been brought in would have been around mandatory inclusion of clover in our swards now. We also have that big change in slurry management towards low-emission slurry spreading. That's just come in the last 8 months, kind of tip of the iceberg stuff. And at the end of this year, we're going to be looking at the changes around antibiotic prescribing and usage. And farmers are going to have to adapt to that too. Mm. And then if we look like in the longer term, we're looking at a 20% reduction in nitrogen fertiliser usage is on the cards by 2030, down to pre-2013 levels. We're also looking at urea being phased out as the plan by 2023. And by 2030, again, we're looking at a 65% of can to be used as protected urea. And every time it's been pushed on farmers with the byline of these changes need to be implemented as a matter of urgency, they need to be implemented on farms today. So, you know, there's a lot of pressure on farmers.
But do you appreciate that these things have to happen if we're to meet climate targets?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I think there's great willingness among farmers to adapt to these changes. But what we're seeing maybe is that at kind of, we say, at industry level, what I come across now is kind of like a failure to facilitate farmers to implement these changes. Like we've been trying to bring clover into our swards here since 2018. We've been making a real big effort to do it, and we're seeing the benefits of using it. It does allow a reduction in nitrogen fertiliser usage, and that's a real positive for us. Now, at the moment, we don't have a clover safe spray to use in our swards. So those stocks ran very short last summer. And they were gone pretty much by October last year. And it's April time. There's lots of reseeds going on at the moment. In 6 weeks' time, people still don't know if we're going to have it. So farmers are either going to be looking at their reseeds and wondering, gosh, what am I going to use? So if they use a product that's not clover safe, they're going to knock back all the clover in their sward. Or otherwise, if they don't use anything, you're going to have weeds, so like thistles and docks and species like that, that are going to reduce the productive lifespan of your sward. Again, that's a huge hurdle for farmers. Like, they have a target of having farms with a clover inclusion rate of 20-25% by the year 2030. And unless we have that, in order to meet, we say, the pressures on us to reduce our nitrogen fertilizer usage, farm profitability is going to be affected. So we have to be getting clover into swards now. But we do need to be supported.
Gillian, you're a supplier to Glanbia. We know that recently they've introduced this controversial peak milk management policy because there is this supply capacity logjam in the system. How do you feel about that? Does that just add to the woes of trying to do everything right?
Well, I guess as a supplier, it's been very frustrating over the last 4 weeks, especially when we look at, you know, efficiency means efficiency and seasonal calving means that you're calving your cows to match a grass growth curve. And that means that, so you're calving them in springtime to make the most economic benefit of plentiful grass supply. And if you end up producing more milk at the shoulders of the year, outside of we say, these peak months, that is actually moving to a less sustainable way of producing milk, because producing milk at the shoulders of the year, you're bringing in more supplement into your farm, and that additional supplement is coming from overseas, and it's less sustainable than our own homegrown grass. So I think that when everything is telling farmers to be more sustainable, to reduce your carbon footprint, yet you're saying, well, you need to move towards a less sustainable model, then you start to question, gosh, what am I doing here? Yeah. I really feel that, you know, there's real frustration among farmers. We've been torn in many different directions here. And, you know, I wish that there was a much greater level of support at industry level to facilitate farmers to be more sustainable. And there are examples of this. I mean, if you look at West Cork Co-op, Carberry, they are funding their farmers to attend a UCC diploma course in environmental sustainability and policy. And like that education that those farmers pick up, they bring it back to their farms. It helps them make better decisions around environmental sustainability on their farms. It helps them communicate with others in their community. It has a very far-reaching positive effect. Like, that is meaningful engagement. If you look at the uptake of low-emission slurry spreading, it's huge. Farmers have done that already all across this area here. And if that was incentivized, if there was maybe a tax break given for buying a low-emission slurry spreader, that would be a real incentive for farmers to get these machines on farms. But again, we don't see that.
But then when you look at EPA figures in relation to air, water and soil quality, it paints a very negative picture, particularly of dairy farming. As a dairy farmer, what do you make of the image of the business that you're in?
At our own farm, look, we're doing our very, very, very best to be more sustainable. You know, I said to you here, if you look around us here, that field there is, that's a clover reseed there. There's 25% clover in that paddock there beside us. Look over there, we've planted new hedging to improve the biodiversity around our farm here. You know, that roadway there behind you, it's all been managed and changed to prevent runoff from the roadway. Like, we're doing our very, very best here. We're trying to be more efficient with how we use fertilizer. We're trying to reduce our inputs. We're using less herbicide, but we need to be facilitated. We need to be supported. And at the same time, like, you know, we have to make a living from and a livelihood from working and being farmers in the countryside here.
Where do you see yourself by 2030? Do you see yourself milking less cows? Do you see more of this land devoted to biodiversity?
Well, I think that we've a huge challenge ahead of us. And look, myself and Neil will certainly still be milking cows here in 10 to 15 years time. But I think that at the moment, what we really, really need is certainty around what's coming down the tracks. Like, for example, with the Glanbia decision last week, that's just sprung upon farmers with very, very little lead-in time. We need certainty, we need planning, and we need joined-up thinking in order to help farms transition. All the examples I've just given you there, there's not a huge level of joined-up thinking going on. And at the same time, more and more has been asked of farmers. We just need a little bit of the industry to work with us here.
That was Gillian O'Sullivan there near Dungarvan on the frustration of farming through contradictions, as she put it, from the industry and other agencies that she and other farmers, she says, must deal with. Now, moving on, with the silage season almost upon us, the Health and Safety Authority is asking farmers and all those working on farms this summer to think again about safety. They're particularly concerned about those working with heavy machinery, because 113 people, 18 of whom were children, have been killed in the past 10 years in accidents on the farm involving tractors, vehicles and machinery. And there are also survivors of these accidents, many of whom have life-changing injuries. It was a fine May evening 11 years ago when Angus Mannion took the teleporter up the farm. Something caught his eye and he stopped.
Well, to best of my knowledge, what happened was I seen an opening in the fence and I got down off the teleporter, parked up the teleporter to have a look at it because it was on the main busy road. So I got off the teleporter and that evening or that day we let out something like 40 or 45 cattle into the same field. And they came running around and dancing around and jumping around the good evening that was in it. And I do believe they bumped up against the teleporter and edged it and pushed it. And it happened so slowly and I was so near to a tree that I didn't even see it happening until I knew the next time I was impaled into a tree with the bucket off, the blade of the bucket off the teleporter.
So you were pinned with no way of getting out?
No way of getting out. And if it had happened quicker, from the doctor's reports and that, I do believe the legs would have been severed off there and then. But it happened so slowly, it cut right through me. And if I got impaled, actually they had to cut away some of the tree when they got me out of it because the nerves and vessels and tendons and all that weren't severed. They were just embedded into a piece of timber and that piece had to be cut out of the tree and taken with me to hospital.
You were taken away to hospital. Take me through, I suppose, the weeks and months after that then, Angus.
Well, the extent of the injuries were so serious that they decided then it would take me to Lourdes Hospital in Drogheda. Now, at that stage, I don't know whether I was drifting in and out or what was happening, but I thought surely my two legs were gone, the lower part of my body. But anyway, as it turned out, just within seconds they were wheeling me for theatre. And another young doctor, seeing the nerves, he explained to me afterwards like a bolt of lightning, that they were still intact and there was life there. So he knew a guy who was specialised in that in the Beaumont Hospital in Dublin. So with that, they got an ambulance and a squad car and got me straight to the Beaumont Hospital in Dublin. That night, I was in theatre all night, 29 operations, 3 years plus in and out of hospital. The hospitals and the staff, I mean, where do I start? The list goes on of people. Who do I thank to see me now compared to that mess I was in that evening I was taken to Drogheda? It's incredible stuff. And look, I do class myself as one of the lucky ones because at least, you know, when you get entangled up with a machine nowadays, they're so powerful. Usually, especially with machinery, one winner and it's not you. And I class myself very lucky that I come out this side of it. But in saying that, it's not something you'd like to wish on anybody else.
Yeah, lucky and unlucky at the same time. That was Angus Mannion back in his feet, but still dealing with the aftermath of the accident. Now, Dr. Emer Smith is a consultant in rehab medicine at the National Rehabilitation Hospital in Dunleary in Dublin, and she joins us. Emer, good morning to you.
Good morning, Damien.
You grew up on a farm in County Cavan and you're now a consultant in rehab medicine. So have you come across cases from your years in practice there where you've seen the damage that an accident like what happened to Angus there on the farm can actually do?
I certainly have, Damien. Farms are high-risk workplaces, I'm sorry to have to say. You know, the common themes of injuries that I have seen over the years are attacks from animals. I've seen bales of hay and silage falling on people and knocking them over. And then, of course, as you mentioned, incidents with machinery like tractors, quad bikes, they are particularly common as well.
And are they the more risky ones, the ones involving vehicles, from your observation?
Yes. So I have seen quite a few involving vehicles, often tractors. I've seen as a recurring theme are tractors, perhaps with front loaders with a lot of weight, or trailers, yeah, again with huge weights, and they've overturned. As a result, the tractor's overturned and the farmer's been ejected from the tractor, or even remains within the tractor but is seriously damaged.
God. And what about the profile of the kind of farming patient that you see? Are they across the age range, Emer, like from youngsters to older people?
Yes. So we've seen children, and I know you've had Kerry Leonard on the programme, who's known to me speaking about her injury. In the last number of years, I've seen a couple of teenagers, but I think more recently the predominant age cohort that I've seen are probably people over 70, and many of these farmers have already handed over the running of the farm to a son or a daughter, but they've remained involved and they're possibly enjoying it a bit more at this stage of their lives because they're involved without having the pressure of being responsible for income. And then very sadly they're struck down by a severe brain injury or a spinal cord injury. And that can be, that is devastating at that point of their lives.
And it's up to you then to meet the families and try and explain what's happening here. It must be like giving news of a bereavement to a family member and to the people themselves.
Yes, and I guess I'm only one of a number of people who are involved in that process of meeting families and exchanging that sad news. And yeah, we would see a huge range of reactions, sometimes from utter denial and someone only very slowly moving through the phases of adjustment, to sometimes a more apparent immediate acceptance of what has happened and a pragmatic response to such a severe injury. But when you talk there about, you know, a grief or a bereavement, the one aspect of this that can be huge for farmers is the loss of identity, because many have farmed all their lives. A farm has been in the family maybe for a very, very long period of time. And when that is stolen from them by a very serious accident, for them, their identity is gone.
And Eimear, we hear it all the time, and there are farmers listening to us now. We all say it about ourselves. Sure, it won't happen to me.
That's right, yes. And, you know, I guess in reality, every injury can't be prevented, you know, particularly where animals are concerned. Sometimes a farmer would have told me, I thought I knew all my animals very well.
Yeah.
But where we're dealing with machinery, that's definitely one area where we can target for prevention. So I think, you know, My advice would be, and people might be listening saying, what would she know? But my advice would be, think about the loads that are being attached to tractors, either on trailers or front loaders, and think maybe two journeys is better than one in terms of safety.
Absolutely. Well, you would know indeed, because as I said at the beginning, you grew up on a farm and now, of course, you're consultant in rehab medicine at the National Rehab Centre in Dunleary. Dr. Eimear Smith, thank you so much, and stay safe. And all the farmers listening to us getting ready to go out this morning, do indeed just take a second to think about the day ahead and to stay safe. And the HSA is inviting you to review your assessment with the help of a website. It's just called farmsafely.com. Farmsafely.com. Dr. Eimear Smith, thank you very much for joining us.
RTE Radio 1.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Have you cattle to sell? Find out what they're worth with our Mart Price Calculator on farmersjournal.ie.
Well, now to the story of Kianon Curran. He has swapped the bright lights of Dublin or London to return to live with his family in Skerries near Athy in County Kildare. And his life now is very different from the busy world of advertising and marketing, as he now has four goats and a Mongolian yurt on the back lawn of his family's Kildare home. We sent Brenda along to see what it's all about.
Bonjour, Brenda, how are you getting on? I'm going to bring you on a little journey here. I want you to meet my goats, Aslan, Geronimo, Satanta and Darby. And they're the best of friends. Basically, they're here in the house at the moment. They've free roam. Gates are open, doors are open, and the guys just float around relaxing. And on a beautiful day like today, they're just enjoying the sun.
You're only recently moved back from London. Tell me why.
I had six amazing years in London, I have to say. I worked representing artists and illustrators. I was blessed to get into the advertising industry. And then when COVID was coming, it was, you know, it was maybe the 16th, 17th of March. I was in my office in London at the time. Myself and my business partner were in our shared space.
You can tell us who the business partner
okay.
is. Go on.
The gentleman's name is David Ford, and he's a former international first-choice goalkeeper and Millwall club legend. and thankfully he's a friend and a business partner. I just felt like, as I said, I felt this was going to go on for a while, and I spun around on my chair and the two of us were shooting the breeze, and I said, David, I feel like I have to go home here. I feel like I should go home to be with my family. Our office was still open. My apartment was still in London. My life was still in London. I got off the plane, and as I drove back towards the house, and I just felt steady. I felt grounded. I felt like the bog was literally calling me home. All I wanted to do was go out and chill in the trees, reimagine childhood in a certain sense, because it felt like I left here a teenager, and to come back and absorb all the subtleties of Irish life again, country life again. And the first lockdown was like being a summer, it was like a summer from primary school. I can't describe how different it feels to wake up in the morning and not have to get onto that bicycle and cycle 4 or 5 miles through the epicentre of city life. It was a level of homeliness that I hadn't experienced before. Come on. So we're going to give the bike some of their mulch at the moment now. Come on.
I bet you didn't keep goats in London.
Not at all. We've never had livestock. We've never had pets other than cats, dogs, fishes and birds.
Okay, so...
and the odd hamster.
Who have we got here? Tell me about your first one.
Okay, so the first puckon to come onto the scene is Aslan. We have some property up the road, and I was actually looking for goats to keep the grass down there. Mm. I asked a family friend to get me a goat, or a couple of goats, and when they arrived at the house with this incredible pygmy goat, I couldn't believe how small he was. Now, he is the most rock and roll animal I've ever met.
Were you surprised at the connection that you both had?
As soon as I looked into his eyes, I knew he was a special animal.
So we're coming down into your lower garden, shall we say?
Yeah, the back garden.
I'm just witnessing the most amazing sight. I have to take a picture of it.
Yeah, go for it.
Can you describe it for our listeners while I take the picture? Okay. Canon.
So like that, we have a fairly sturdy swing, like a bench swing in the back garden. And currently Satanta and Darby, who are our two kids, are flaked out on that bench, just soaking up the sun.
It's really far from the metropolis of London.
It was a dream of mine to come home to Ireland, a couple of donkeys, some goats, a girlfriend, a motorbike, and I'd be living the best life, do you know?
And what bit have you not got?
Oh no, we've got it, yeah. It's worked out.
You've got
it's
all
worked
of it.
Out. I've got all of it, yeah. But there was times in London when I'd be, you know, you'd be homesick, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this one, but I'd go back to the apartment, and as I'd be ironing my shirts in the evening time, and I'd go on to the RTE archives. And then I'd go on to Dundeel, and I'd be looking at the price of goats and chickens, and, you know, you'd just be brainstorming about what kind of life you could build for yourself if you did come home. And it's happened. And if anyone has a bit of space...
He's after undoing my lace.
Yeah. They love zips and laces. Love them. So now we're going to try and get the guys to pop up onto the little jungle gym, as I call it, which is basically just a nice little platform of pallets, a lovely walkway ramp, and then we have a platform that the goats can stand up on top of.
And when you say gym, are you talking about like a workout for them?
Yeah, in many ways it is, because you can see, in particular with the young lads, they'll get to a certain height, they jump off, and then as each day goes past, they get more and more comfortable climbing, and they get to exercise their nature, which is to climb, to jump, and to... you know, live their best lives in every way possible. Come on, gents, that's it. On show, look at this, top of the world. So the two guys, they look majestic.
Yeah.
They're easily up about 8 foot now.
Also, what catches the eye in your back garden is very large yurt. Can you explain it to me and paint a picture, first of all, of what we're looking at?
So, yeah, Brenda, this is where I live. When I came home, I was looking for my own space. I was looking for somewhere to relax in the evenings, and I felt like the yurt was the perfect fit for me. This one is 6 meters wide, yeah, and it's 2.8 meters tall, and it's almost like a small circus tent, except with a very decorative small door at the entrance. So what we can do is we can go inside, yeah, and I can explain how it's built and why it's built.
Wow, this is not what I expected.
Yeah.
So amazing.
What we have is beautifully hand-painted, hand-carved
blue centre poles that hold up the roof. We have an incredible centrepiece that opens up into direct air. So currently we're standing in the earth, and the top of the earth, there's a beautiful opening, two very strong pillars in the centre that hold that middle piece up. Everything is tied together with horsehair. There's no glue, there's no screws. This building is designed to be taken down and put up within a matter of hours.
And I see you've your telly and everything here.
Yeah.
Wow.
I settled in, yeah. So I got plugs in, I have a TV, I have some of my music bits here, I have my vinyls.
Why a yurt?
I felt like you'd be living in bricks and mortar for a long, long time. I always wanted to experience something a little bit different. And when I came home, I was just browsing online thinking, how am I going to put a roof over my head? And it just clicked at me. I was like, why not live like a Mongolian nomad and just buy a yurt? London was the concrete jungle. Rooms were small and unbelievably expensive. Now to be here and feel like I'm living in a piece of art. There's history, there's culture, there's narrative, there's the feeling and the expression of Mongolian culture here in my back garden, and I can come down here and call it my own. So it does feel very uplifting, and I feel incredibly lucky to be lying on bed here at night time and be able to look up at this incredible design. Never gets any less special.
Before I go, I noticed that you have, what, 1, 2, 3, 4 guitars, a bouzouki, bongos, lots of music.
Yeah, I love the music.
So, Keenan, you got the girlfriend, you got the motorbike, yeah. You got the yurt and the goats. Is that the right order, no?
Oh, number one. That's number one. You've nailed it. Yeah,
right, what are you going to sing for me?
So I'm going to sing Negative Vibes by Damien Dempsey. It's a song that sat with me for the last few months, so I'm going to honour it.
Lord, won't you give me the strength to be strong and be true? 'Cause Lord, when the devil gets into my head, I'm so blue. Lord, won't you give me the strength to be strong and be true? Will you knock me?
That is just brilliant. That's Keenan Curran there singing Negative Vibes by Damien Dempsey, and nothing negative about that report there with Brenda. And to see more of Keenan's adventures with Aslan and the other goats, check out his Instagram page called Keenan Curran. And Brenda has a video up which we have retweeted as well. Now, each year the farm accountancy firm IFAC conducts a survey of farmers just to get a sense of how they're running their business, the challenges they face and their general outlook for the future. And Declan McAvoy of IFAC joins me now just to go through some of the findings. Declan, good morning. I just want to start with, I suppose, the issue of general well-being of farmers in the survey, which I know you captured as well, particularly over the last 12 months. Were you able to ascertain, you know, the general wellness of farmers in the survey?
Yes, good morning, Damien. You know, farmers, inside the farm gate, farmers were fine because business was not affected by COVID. But the problem was that outside the farm gate, no different to anyone else, it was impacted hugely. Farming is a sole business, you're isolated, and as a result, you know, farmers are on their own. A couple of things came out of it, you know, from a wellness point of view, but the big fact came out that 42% of farmers didn't know who to call for support with difficulties. And the one thing about farmers are very good to look after themselves or look after everyone else, but poor to look after themselves. So farmers need to start reaching out for help.
And for a lot of farmers, the social outlets have all disappeared, including the Mart. But I was surprised that farmers actually like these online sales.
Yeah, 7 out of 10 farmers stated that they want to continue selling online. You know, so it just shows farmers are very, very good to adapt to technology. And if you look over the last number of years, you know, farmers' GPS in the arable sector, robots, online accounting, online with the Department of Agriculture. But the big issue that comes through is broadband. 86% say broadband is essential or critical. And the question comes up then, how good is broadband? We all know it's one of the laggards here in this country. Broadband is poor and we need to improve broadband.
Absolutely. Now, if you're planning for the future, you know, we make a will or appoint powers of attorney and all of that. It doesn't seem that farmers are too bothered by that. How significant and worrying is that, Declan?
Well, as the survey said, 40% of 4 out of 10 have not made a will. 6 out of 10 have made a will. How good is that will they've made? How up to date it is? So it is very, very worrying. The one thing that farmers need to concentrate on is that succession is not a job. It's a process. It's something that over time, you know, we specialise in succession because we have empathy with farmers. We understand it. And a couple of other important stuff that came out of it is, even though 58%, 6 out of 10 plan to retire, 3 out of 10 still wanted to remain involved in the business. There's nothing to stop them transferring on the land and still remaining in the business through partnerships or whatever other mechanism can be there. Mm. But the big one is make a will, have a will, look at it annually or biannually, keep it up to date. And the other one, and you mentioned it there, Damien, was power of attorney. Farmers and everyone who has assets or business need to put in an enduring power of attorney. Enduring power of attorney allows the business to be run, God forbid, should you become mentally incapacitated.
Yeah, or even if you have a bad accident, which could lead to brain injury as well or something like that. And we were talking about injuries earlier. What sense are you getting from the survey farmers are ready to buy into environmental sustainability?
Well, I was just listening to Gillian earlier on, and the huge important point she made was the goalposts keep changing. Farmers are guardians of the countryside and they have no problem buying in and helping out. But there's no coherent plan, or if a plan is brought out, the measurements around the plan are very complex. There's mixed messaging that's there. So what needs to happen is a coherent long-term plan, simple measures that can be measured within the farm.
All right. Well, Declan, it's a treasure trove of stats and figures, the report which was published last week. But if people want to read more and get more figures from it, where can they find it?
They can find it on our website, www.ifac.ie, and look for Farm Report 2021.
All right. And there's more details and advice there indeed in relation to wills and succession planning and all of that as well. Declan, thanks very much for taking our call. Have a great day. And we look forward to chatting with you maybe more specifically about some of those items in the future. Now, many rural towns and villages in Roscommon, Leitrim and other parts of the West have colourful mosaic shop fronts, each of them unique. And you might have noticed them on your travels there. But when and how did this style of shop front become popular? Well, Roscommon native Laura Early has written a book about it, and it turns out the trend can be traced back to a man called John Crane, who set up Irish mosaics back in the 1940s. Now, Ella McSweeney went to Roscommon, where she met one of the Italian mosaic makers who worked in the original factory, Sergio Benedetti. But she began by meeting Laura and explained why the shop fronts in Elphin and County Roscommon are so special to her.
Yeah, I suppose this is the very first location that I remember seeing the mosaics. Murray's Pub is in the middle of the town here. And I remember when I was about 15, I noticed Murray's, and it's got black and yellow and white mosaics out the front and a big bold red sign saying Murray's. So I remember as a teenager recognising it and thinking, wow, this is amazing. We're in this very rural town. Why are these mosaics so beautiful and colourful? So I remember just Elphin being the first place I recognised these mosaics. That thrill of noticing them for me was so exciting. Every time I went to a new town and turned the corner, I'd find another one and I'd be like celebrating because there'd be another one. But yeah, they're quite ubiquitous too, Roscommon and Leitrim and Westmeath. And we have Morris Meats here up the road. It's a butcher shop. They're blue, white and black mosaics on the front with a very beautiful geometric pattern at the front as well.
Hello girls, how are you?
Hello.
How are you?
Hi, how are you?
How are you? No, my health. How are you?
How are you? I'm Ella. So this is Benny Morris from Elphin from Morris Meats. He has a fantastic butchers here with beautiful mosaics on the front. I think it was your father, wasn't
it? Yeah, my father was responsible for getting a man called Tom Mulvey from Roscommon Town. And I would say it was in the 60s.
Your father got Irish mosaics to put the front on. And why did your dad do that?
He was a very artistic man himself, very much into the art and he liked it, and I like it myself.
To me, they're like public art in a public space.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it?
I do indeed. Yeah, I admire it every time. You know, especially if I'm at the filling station across the road and I look across, I think it is. It's absolutely beautiful.
It's a work of art.
A work of art, it is. And the way it was presented and the way it was finished and all that, you know, it was absolutely beautiful. And, you know, it's part of his memory. That's what we do.
So Irish Mosaics Limited was founded by John Crane. He was originally from Ballygar in County Galway. And John Crane was fascinated with mosaics, so he went to train in Glasgow. He came home and he set up Irish Mosaics in Roscommon in 1946. So originally the company was to supply mosaics for the likes of shop fronts and pub fronts, and also they made terrazzo, which is a mixture of marble and cement chipping, and this is what would have been used for the likes of a butcher's floor or even work top surfaces. There was a trend at the time driven by the church, so I think that's why it was so successful at the time. John Crane needed craftspeople to make these artistic mosaics. So John contacted the Mosaic University in Spilimbergo in Italy. So Luciano Di Paoli then came over with Romeo Tullio, and then Sergio Benedetti finally came over then in the 60s.
It was very sad when I came, because it was very much different than what I was used to. I found the food completely different, especially when it came to vegetables. Like, that time was mostly turnip, cabbage, potatoes, which were fine, but there was no like cucumbers, tomatoes. I used to never see them, and I used to ask if someone went to Dublin, I would ask them to buy me a cucumber. And I remember after 3 months coming, I just wrote back to my father, says, "Look at that, I can't stick it." I says, "I'm coming back." So 3 months passed, and eventually then I started getting friendly, and there I'm here, just 60 years this year.
When you worked in the factory, can you tell me about life in the factory? How many people were there and what were you doing every day?
Well, every day we were just sitting at a bench where you had a block and a hammer, and you chip away and you just cut the pieces according to what you want to do, whatever you need to do. Because that time, most of the work, it was church work.
It's interesting now because Laura has written this beautiful book, this photographic book, and it has these amazing photographs of these mosaic shop fronts of butchers all around Roscommon and parts of the west of Ireland. And when you see these places,
they were everywhere, those.
You know, what do you make of it now?
It's amazing, in a way, to think that a man like John Crane had the vision. Do you know, he had the vision himself, but it was brilliant. And it's lovely to see those places.
Do you have a favourite of all the ones that exist?
Like, I know there is one that I've done myself. It's in Dublin. It's Buckley's Butcher. And there is a lamb and a cow or a bullock there. And it's lovely to see. It's different. You don't see now those things.
So John Crane passed away in 1964. And the company was handed over to Sergio Benedetti and others opened up Mozart Studios, which was another mosaic factory in Roscommon a couple of years after that. So the trade still kept going up until 2017. Sergio Benedetti, he reluctantly retired in 2017.
So Laura, you've brought me to Carrick and Shannon, and we're standing outside St Mary's Church, and in front of us is the most exquisite shop front, which has a mosaic. It's called Geraghty's. Tell me about this shop.
Geraghty's is very special. I love it so much. It has these beautiful St. Bridget crosses dotted around the front of the shop. They're kind of in blues, browns, blacks, greens, and then the background is this lovely cream mosaic. The shop front has a lovely kind of almost turquoise paint around the edges, and Geraghty's in bold
capital letters adorns the front as well.
Oh, it's exquisite to look at. Now, it's a music shop now, is it?
Yeah, it's a music shop and it's family run. The ladies who own it, there's a couple of generations still living there and running the shop as well. Irish Mosaics would have applied the mosaics for Gertie's, and I think, as far as I can remember, the lady told me it was about in the 50s that they were applied.
In the 50s, and yet they look as new, don't they? They
yeah.
look in fantastic order. You know, I suppose it's so easy to imagine a place like that if it's sold on just being the shopfront being demolished and no one really thinking twice about it, really, until this book has come out and highlighted the history of these places. Are you concerned that is going to happen?
County councils, Leitrim County Council and Roscommon County Council will have to think twice about you know, knocking these places down and maybe perhaps listing these buildings, because they're so special and unique to the west of Ireland. You know, this is what brings character to this town here, and you know, this is really unique, and the design is so different compared to any other shop front. You know, it's the patterns are irregular, the colours are sporadic. There's history embedded in the mosaic as well, with the St. Bridget's cross. You know, you don't usually see designs like that on shop fronts anymore. And if we do, they're nothing like this. So I think it's really important to protect these buildings now and to, you know, acknowledge their beauty.
Yes, indeed. That was Laura Early in Roscommon with Ella there during the week. Laura's magnificent photographic book was funded by Roscommon County Council and the Creative Ireland programme, called Roscommon's Mosaic Tradition. You can buy it on our website, lauraearlyart.com. That's www.lauraearlyart.com. Well, that's almost all we have time for this week on Countrywide. Today's programme was produced by Eileen Herron. Brian Moss was our broadcast coordinator and Mark Dwyer was on sound. Stay tuned for playback after the 9 news here on Radio 1. But to finish this week, we've a golden moment from yesterday's Liveline as County Cork farmer John Arnold described to Joe the scene around him on his farm in Bartlemy. But first, when I was at Gillian O'Sullivan's farm yesterday, as the church bells rang out at noon, her dog Lacey decided to howl along. Until we talk to you at the same time next week, bye-bye and thanks for listening.
Lovely this time of the year, milking yeah. the cows walking slowly, chewing the cud, you milk them, you feed the calves, they're back out grazing the grass now, grass is growing, crops are growing, flowers are growing. I was planting oak trees last week, I just planted 50 or 60 oak trees and replacing some. The countryside now is just actually in bloom, here in front of me now on the lawn, it's full of dandelions and daisies. Mary cut them yesterday, but they're up again, you know, all the countryside is yellow for some people call it gorse, I mean, it's all over the beaches all over the country. It's a beautiful, deep, kind of a yellow, orangey colour. Just a beautiful time. And the great variety in farming this time of year. You know, I was out in the field yesterday with the fencing and I saw 3 rabbits and 2 foxes. There's nettles, there's grass, there's different plants growing around. We'll bring in the cows about 4:30, 4:45. From now, for the next 6 to 8 weeks, is the peak grass growing period
beautiful,
of the year.
Beautiful.
We close the field for hay and silage. And, you know, everything is just lovely. Farming is tough, but at this time of the year, it's a beautiful occupation.
That was John, that was a beautiful description. That was a beautiful description.
Yeah.
I really,
all right.
I thank you sincerely for that. I say yeah.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Have you cattle to sell? Find out what they're worth with our Mart Price Calculator on farmersjournal.ie.
RTE Radio 1.